Today's podcast is sponsored by RadRx, your source for quality online education for interventional and diagnostic radiology coding, taught by subject matter expert Stacy Buck. For more information and testimonials, visit RadRx.com. Struggling to learn interventional radiology coding? If so, RadRx has the perfect solution for you. Cracking the IR Code, Mastering Interventional Radiology and Cardiology online training program. In this program, interventional radiology coding expert Stacy Buck breaks down the complexities of interventional radiology coding in easy-to-understand terms so you can grasp this complex specialty. Through her course, Stacy has assisted many coders with little or no interventional radiology coding experience in successfully passing the CIRC exam on the first attempt. For additional information and testimonials, visit RadRx.com. Welcome to Who Cares What Stacy Says, a podcast providing insights and advice on how to take your medical coding career to the next level. And now, here's your host, Stacy Buck.
Welcome to Who Cares What Stacy Says. I am your host, Stacy Buck. In today's episode, I wrap up my interview with Christine Hall of Sterling Global Solutions. If you haven't yet listened to parts one and two of my interview with Christine, Technology and Healthcare, Then and Now, and Show Me the Money, I highly recommend that you give them a listen. You won't be disappointed. In today's episode, titled Coding Consultant Confessions, we have lots of laughs. In this episode, I asked Christine to reveal her professional pet peeve, which led to an in-depth discussion about the importance of compliance plans and auditing. Then we wrapped up the interview with some fun questions and commentary. I asked her to reveal her most embarrassing moment professionally, which involves someone many of us know and who she referred to as the, quote, Brad Pitt of our industry. We also provide commentary on some of our favorite medical TV shows and literally offer up some, quote, eye-rolling moments. And I personally issued a challenge to the legendary Betty White. And now here's my final part of the interview with Christine Hall, Coding Consultant Confessions. Enjoy.
Okay, so let me ask you this. Let's get into some fun questions. We've been talking about more serious topics, and we've had some fun along the way in our serious topics. But, you know, what is your biggest professional pet peeve? I think there are so many with what we do.
Oh, I think I already touched on this. I have a huge pet peeve with this is how we get it paid.
Yes.
Because I have worked on and in compliance for so long, and I've had to see some of the overpayments that had to be refunded back to payers, it just disturbs me when someone in the office says that's how we get paid, as opposed to saying, you know, this modifier is supported or this add-on code is supported. The other pet peeve I have is when they tell patients they can't have multiple procedures on one day. So you have to come back tomorrow or next week to have this other procedure done because we won't get paid. We'll only get paid half if we do two procedures at one time.
That's a compliance issue right there.
Scheduling it is.
Days. It's huge if you get caught doing that. Yeah,
absolutely. So, you know, those are kind of my pet peeves is when I guess the broader sense is when people are pushing the envelope or crossing a line that I have a huge problem with that, because I think we could have your practice is going to be just as successful when you do the right thing and you do it because this is the right modifier, the right code, the documentation supports it. You're going to do just as well by doing the right thing than cutting corners and, or, you know, another one would be that that's how so-and-so told us to do it.
Yeah.
From what? From where? Show me where. You do this for a living. You should know what the payer guidelines are. You should know what coding guidelines are pertaining to that. So I think that's my pet peeve is when people aren't really investing in themselves and their positions, their careers.
Yeah. Well, and again, it goes back to that fee for service model. And so people find ways to work the system in the fee for service model and maximize the reimbursement where it's not in the best interest of the patient. You are putting them under anesthesia in some cases. I mean, IR stuff that I do, you're under moderate sedation. Okay. You're not completely knocking you out, But anytime somebody goes under anesthesia, there's a risk to the patient. Anytime they're sticking anything in you for any reason, there's a, the more times they bring you back, the more they're putting the patient at risk, and it is not fair to the patient. And the patients don't have an understanding of these processes. If the doctor says, hey, we can't do this, because they won't mention the issue of payment. They'll just tell them, we're going to schedule this on this day, and then you have to come back. They don't say anything about getting paid. And you and I have shared some horror stories of how things are presented or not presented to patients. So, yeah, so value. I'm glad to see the direction with value-based care and just changes in the healthcare industry, because we do what we do behind the scenes. Like, it's interesting, like people who are in medical coding and, you know, have jobs that we do or deal with coding, we're behind the scenes, but we see so much behind the scenes. We are like a witness to so many things.
Oh yeah.
And we are some of the first people that can pick up on potential issues. Some issues have nothing to do with coding. You see enough charts, you can start picking up on patterns and noticing things. Yeah. Like, you just tell, you can, you know, we're not physicians. We can't diagnose patients. We're not the authority on medical necessity, but when you've seen enough medical records in your career, you start to notice when things don't look quite right. There's a lot of clinical knowledge that you end up learning. It's just secondhand when you become a coder. I've had people in conversations say to me, oh, are you a physician? I'm like, no. I'm like, I think it's funny that people think I'm a physician. I'm like, absolutely not.
And we get that a lot.
I've evolved. I feel like I've kind of like evolved in a way, and I hope this doesn't like insult like nurses like when I say this, but when I started out in like medical records and people say, oh, where do you work? And I would say a hospital, and they'd say, oh, are you a nurse? And I'd say, you do realize there are other people who work in a hospital other than nurses. Now, if I get into a conversation, blah, 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 and they don't know exactly what I do, or if I have like workers come to the house, I work from home, so you have a contractor here or a paramedic or whatever, they come in, and they'll see like my illustrations on the desk. And they've asked me, are you a physician? And I'm like, no. I'm like, I work with physicians, but I'm not. So it's funny. So people used to say, oh, are you a nurse? Some people are like, oh, are you a physician? So I've gotten from an RN to an MD by, you know, getting into coding. At least it appears that way. But I've diagnosed friends, their conditions, because of my knowledge before they got a diagnosis from a doctor. So sometimes I don't even need Google, just saying. So that's a skill that I picked up. Although I don't plan on getting into telehealth anytime soon and trying that.
Really? Because my son, you know, he said he could just go on an app with you and you could just tell him what's wrong, right?
Right, exactly. So I'm hit or miss. I might know what's wrong with somebody. I might not. But in some cases, I've been like spot on, which I think is like super funny. Like, I'm like, oh, okay. I actually was able to figure that out before anybody else did, which I always find, you know, very interesting.
Can I add one more thing to my pet peeve? Absolutely. I want to add one more pet peeve. One more pet peeve is that I don't think that providers sometimes look at the big picture. There are so many other services that they are doing in their practice, but they're not coding it or reporting it. And sometimes they hyper-focus on other things. So let me give you an example. Last year, the AMA came out with this code, 99072. Which meant that there was a code to describe additional services that had to be either performed or supplies purchased for patients that were exposed to COVID and the respiratory conditions that were associated with COVID, except there was no reimbursement value to it. The code is a status B code. There's no additional reimbursement. There's no additional. And I fought with providers that said, you have to put that code on every claim. And I said, but there's no reimbursement to it. What's the, not that there wasn't a point to it, but there's no reimbursement set aside. So then I would shift gears and say, how about, you know, why aren't you doing EKGs on your welcome to Medicare visits? Or why don't you do your screening assessments with all of your patients at their annual wellness visits? Or, you know, how come you're not utilizing those services? Oh, they just take up too much time and they don't pay. But we're going to report a code that has a $0 value. So I think sometimes that really bothers me when they're not open to maybe see what's in front of them, but they're thinking of other things that can generate, you know, or potentially generate an income without really looking about what they're already doing in a practice. So again, that's pushing that envelope a little bit one way or another. That's it. So thanks for letting me say that.
Yeah, no, I completely understand that. And kind of, you know, what you were saying before, like my thing, and particularly in working with physicians and going to them and saying, okay, this all this time you've been coding this incorrectly, you need to stop this. Well, we got paid. Okay. I'm like, yeah, and that's a problem that you got paid. Your payer is reimbursing you on good faith that what you're representing on the claim is documented in your medical record. That's why you got paid. So let's not even try to justify this. We got paid. That doesn't mean you're entitled to keep the money.
No, right. Exactly.
Yeah. And I hit on that a lot with physicians. That's I've in my career, I've worked with hospitals and I've worked with physicians. So I've done hospital, you know, coding, and I've done pro fee coding, and hospitals have always been way ahead of the compliance curve with compliance programs and monitoring, you know, that stuff. Obviously they were heavily scrutinized because that's where a lot of your big dollars are in hospitals.
Right, so right.
They're well, you know, far along in compliance. Not that they still don't have problems because things are found, but physicians are, I'm like, are you ever, how many years, you know, you should have had a compliance program in place like 20 years ago. You should be auditing.
10 years
Nobody's
ago.
Auditing and like looking at anything. And they just want to bury their heads in this. And then when they find an issue, oh, I'm like, well, you need to pay this money back. Well, we're just not going to do it going forward. What? Oh.
Well, right. And then so just to piggyback off what you said there, I get this all the time. Do you have a compliance program in place? Can I see your latest compliance report? Oh, we don't have one. Well, they were mandatory in 2010 with the Affordable Care Act. If you're receiving any federal funds, Medicare, Medicaid, you have to have a compliance program. And I say to them, if you implement a compliance program,
now.
It is mandatory.
Years ago,
2010, right? It was voluntary, but if
mandatory, yes.
If you accept federal funds, if you don't have accept any federal funds, you know, maybe you're a pediatrician who doesn't do Medicare, Medicaid, then it's not mandatory. It is suggested still. But what I find when we implement a compliance program and work the program, do the audits, we always find money that is left on the table. There's always opportunities that are left on the table. Once you start having that person come in and review the documentation, that's where we find those services that are not being billed. It's not always a negative overpayment. Sometimes it really is. You know, you are so far behind the ball that you're missing out on all of these revenue opportunities that you're documenting. You're just not reporting them. So that's something else that I don't think that a lot of providers, those pro fee providers, realize is that they leave money on the table by not having a compliance program in place. And I know I'm a compliance officer, so I'm biased for that, but think of all the opportunities that you're missing, or how much risk is out there when it could be something very simple, like just adjusting your documentation a sentence or two,
and
then bam, right?
Yeah.
So that is a big thing out there. I think we haven't been able to talk to some of the smaller people, the smaller providers. I know locally, I have a very hard time talking to my local providers about engaging in a compliance program, trying to share with them those benefits that come from a compliance program, avoiding risks. It's not until they get that overpayment request letter that suddenly they are interested in implementing a compliance program or doing an internal audit and education. And that's the wrong time to do that. You should always have it in place ahead of time. So,
yeah, absolutely. It's, you know, interesting to me. It's, you know, that usually there's pushback about cost of doing an audit, having someone come in. But the cost oftentimes can save you like huge like headaches if you're, you know, spending, you know, a few thousand dollars up front, whatever, whether it's $3,000, $4,000, $5,000, whatever the case may be, to have a, you know, a random sample of something looked at, that could be saving. You could find money, like you say, there are audits where you will find money, they're missing revenue, and more than pays for itself. Mm-hmm. But on the flip side, maybe it's finding problems that you're identifying them before a payer does, and it's going to save you, you know, overpaying tens of thousands of dollars, possibly hundreds of thousands of dollars. You know, I've worked with providers over the years who eventually end up getting looked at. And now you're talking $200,000, $300,000 worth of payments that are under scrutiny. And if you would have just had someone come in and work with you, had an outside consultant doing an audit, doing some education, a few little tweaks in your documentation and in your process would have avoided the whole darn mess.
How many
so now
times
you've got the
government
looking at you, you've got your attorney involved, and you're paying consultant. You're paying the consultant the money anyway to give their review of your coding and your cases. And now you're paying an attorney, and now you're potentially not just overpayments. You could be paying penalties on top of that.
Or prepayment, you know, prepayment
Yes.
You know, that they would have to do that before they could even get paid. That's horrible. Yeah. Or
I had someone years ago contact me. I may have mentioned it in a podcast. I don't know. I know I've talked about it on webinars. I don't know if I did it in a podcast, but a client contacted me because they were on 100% prepaid. They weren't a client of mine before. They became a client because they called me when they were on 100% prepayment review for Medicare because they had a 60% denial rate on records they had sent in. I'm like, who lets the records go out the door before anybody looks at them? Didn't, when you got all these ADRs that didn't raise a flag to you, and now you've got a 60% denial rate. And that was one of those situations, if you'd had an audit done and spent a few $1,000 up front, that never would have happened. I fixed
the problem. But we didn't know.
Yeah.
We didn't know. Nobody ever told us. But you never asked anybody to look at your things to tell you. So yeah, it's frustrating.
Providers need to look at, you know, businesses like mine and yours as it's like an additional level of insurance. Like you pay for your insurance policy, like, and you hope that you never have to use that insurance policy, but you pay that premium every year for that insurance policy and pray you never need to use it. Getting an audit is a form of an insurance policy. It really is. And you want to pay that money to avoid a potentially bigger problem. And now there's so much scrutiny at so many levels through so many different darn programs that they keep adding that physicians, I think, are being more scrutinized now than they ever have been. It was heavily on hospitals, but I'm seeing more and more physicians. I just had someone a few weeks ago contact me. A doctor was being looked at for interventional radiology procedures. Going back to the years I reviewed were 2014, 2015, and 2016.
Yeah, they can review back. They can go back 6 years.
And the government is looking at 14, 15, and 16. Mm-hmm. So there you go. So it's, and the problems that I saw there are common issues that I've seen other places. So it wasn't anything new to me. It was one of those things, as soon as I got the claim forms, I just saw the claim forms. I didn't even look at the reports. Just looking at 1500 forms, it said they are all wrong. Every single claim is wrong.
And that could have been avoided if they would have just had you come in before that. Yes. They would have saved on the cost of defending themselves. That's something I share with providers all the time. Yep. I understand what you're saying to me as a provider, that clinically these notes make sense to you and your peers. However, from a payer's perspective, they have already sent you LCDs, NCDs, payer policies of their expectation of your documentation, and it's short. So why not fix that before it becomes a problem, before you have to defend yourself? You never get your attorney fees back. You never get those, you know, and now you are under the microscope. So
exactly. That one client that found me after they were in like a mess, you know, the majority of their patients were Medicare patients. So the majority of their revenue stream is cut off. Now they're paying their attorney to be involved. Now they're paying me tens of thousands of dollars to recoup this money while your revenue stream isn't there. Like, you can't afford to pay me, but you need to find a way to pay me because I'm the only person who's going to get your money by writing appeals on all of these things, working with you and getting addendums. And almost every single claim was paid on appeal. It was a very small percentage that we weren't successful with, but it took probably a year and a half to work through all those claims and get them paid, because then on the payer side, they were slow on the review process. They weren't turning them around in a timely fashion. So imagine going now like 2 years with your Medicare revenue. Again, that's the majority of your patients, the majority of your practice being cut off. And then you're having additional expenses to bail you out at the same time where you're not making any money. So that's a story I tell a lot when I do presentations, because it drives the point home that that can happen to anyone. And the interesting thing was that client said to me, well, we had gone through an audit with Blue Cross Blue Shield and we passed that with flying colors and they didn't find anything. And I said, well, it depends on the auditor that you have looking at, you know, your cases. And again, it's Blue Cross Blue Shield. It's like not Medicare. Now they should be following the same stuff. I'm surprised whoever looked at that for BCBS, boy, did they miss an opportunity to go after them for money. So they're lucky that BCBS left them alone and didn't, because I'm like, I don't care who the payer is. This stuff is problematic and they could have dinged you and they could have done the same thing to you if they had chosen to. So yeah, there's a lot of horror stories out there. That's why I love talking to consultants and the projects that they work on. We can all share stories about different things that we've been involved in, and expert witness work. I love.
Me too.
I should do an episode on that. That's like super, super fun work. But again, when somebody needs an expert witness to work on their behalf, now you're talking big bucks because you're paying your attorney and the expert witness through this whole process. But it is super fun work. Okay, so now let's definitely turn in. Let's go back to the fun, the like fun side of things here. So this is a question that I asked like in Tony's episode, and I loved her answer. It was an unexpected answer and it was super funny. So I want to see if you can like show Tony up with like your answer to this question here. You got to have something good.
I don't know if I can. I heard that episode and I don't know that I can, I'll give it a good shot.
So what is the funniest or oddest thing you have ever read in a medical record?
Honestly, the funniest thing that I've ever seen in a medical record was just that the provider added their own ad lib to it. So I've seen a lot of she's crazy. I've seen a lot of, medication hunting, things like that, that are actually documented in the chart. And I think, oh, Lord, please don't put your opinions in here. Because what if the patient asks to see this? And
right.
Is it clinically relative, or is that just your opinion, or is it your medical opinion that they're crazy? And can you expand upon it? Because I don't have a code for crazy. the stories that the wives tell on their husbands. So I say it all the time, where wife interjects and says, patient not taking hypertensive medication, eating fried chicken, and refuses to walk the dog. So that is in the medical record there that I've seen. So we've seen a lot of those, and more so from the paper records that have that information. And I've seen more from paper records than I did EMRs. Because EMRs now, we have a lot of macros that are built in, and there's a lot of, boxes that they click and things like that. But from the old records.
There's not as much free text in an EHR. Yeah.
Right. Yes. Yeah. So that's probably it. I think the funniest things are those wives telling on their husbands. In South Florida, we have a lot of very strong, powerful wives that want to go to the doctor with their husbands so that they can tell the doctor what's exactly going on. And he never walks a dog.
Men don't say anything. Like, my parents are the perfect example of that. Like, my dad will go to the doctor and the doctor will ask him, how are you doing? Fine. Everything's fine. I'm good. Fine. So my mom, certain appointments will go because my mom will tell the doctor exactly what is going on with my father. Because you can ask my dad like questions and he's fine. No matter what's going on with him, he's fine. He's not going to complain about anything. He's not going to offer any information whatsoever. So it definitely does happen. And I like understand that. So I gotta say, I'm gonna be honest, I love you, but that wasn't even like Tony's answer, just like by far.
It's hard to compete with the
doctor being outed as a cheater, through the voice recognition.
That I had made chuckling and laughing when I heard that. Because I can see it happening. Like, I can see the doctor with the dictation in front of him, in front of the computer, and just talking while he's multitasking with something else and authenticated the record. And that was it. Like, I can see it happening. And it just made me chuckle so loud.
That voice recognition, like, it will get you. While you were talking about the doctor referring to like the patient as being crazy, and their descriptions of the patient, it reminded me of the Seinfeld episode where Elaine got labeled as the difficult patient.
Uh-huh.
And so then she was trying to like find like a doctor, like, that kind of thing. So just so many things in life can come back to a Seinfeld episode. And that's one of them, back to the episode. And then I remember like drawing the eyebrows on Uncle Leo. So then they said that he was like angry. And so they asked him to leave, like that whole episode there in the doctor's office. And then the other doctor's office episode with the dad, his wallet was stolen. Who stole my wallet?
When he had in the
room. I'm a big Seinfeld fan, obviously.
I see. That's awesome though.
Oh gosh, that's like super funny. Okay. So what is your most embarrassing moment professionally? Like, what's that one moment where you're just like, oh my gosh, I cannot believe that just happened.
Recently?
Hey, if you've got a recent one, share. I honestly couldn't think of any professionally. Like, I thought about how would I answer that question? I don't think I have.
No, you know what this is. I've shared this with you.
I do?
Okay. Yes. I think
professionally,
one of my most embarrassing moments recently was I was answering a connection on LinkedIn.
Oh, yes. I remember now. I don't. Okay. Okay,
with
it.
With Brian Quay, who I'm a massive fan. And so when he connected with me on LinkedIn, I was like, oh my God, this is like the Brad Pitt of our industry that just connected with me on LinkedIn. And I always send a personal message. Well, that day I copied the personal message from another person that I had messaged. And I put it on Brian's thing. And I said, oh, I'm such a huge fan. And thank you for connecting with me. And I called him Tony. So Brian emails me back through LinkedIn. And he said, my name is Tony. I don't know who you're a big fan of. But
no, my name is Brian. Brian. You called him Tony again. You did it again.
Oh, my God, Brian. I'm so sorry. Listen, I can't do this right, but maybe he should be Tony. You know, sometimes I see that. I see like there could be,
Could be a Tony. He looks like he's a Tony.
Maybe he's a Brian Anthony, right? We don't know what his middle name is. But I said it then and I apologized and I explained the situation. And then he kind of went radio silent on me for a while, but recently he reached out and I'm so honored. And we've had a chat now. And I think he knows that I know his name is Tony. I mean, Brian. Just kidding.
Oh, that's so funny.
So yeah, that was so embarrassing because I am such a fan and I got called out on that. So yeah.
And Tony inviting you to be on his podcast had nothing to do with me. I did not put him up to that. Because remember, I said, hey, well, if you want, I'll put in a good word for you. But I honestly never did anything. So that was
really?
That was a Tony, aka Brian's own free will that what? He invited you to be on his podcast.
Yeah, well, he did. He invited me, and I was on vacation last week, so we're going to get together probably late this week, maybe next week, probably. And so I'm going to have to call him Tony throughout the entire thing just to piggyback off of this podcast.
I think that is just super funny. I have forgotten about that story. As soon as you start to tell it, I'm like, yes, I did hear the Tony story. For sure. So
yeah.
I think we've all done that, like in emails or something, you're copying and pasting when you're sending the same message to people. I try to pause and always reread the name, or if I'm doing a copy paste, I just won't put a name. I'll just like, hi, and then the message and leave a name off to avoid.
Well, I appreciate the people that reach out to me and connect with me on the LinkedIn. And I really want to do that personal connection. Big noise on my side. I really want to make that personal connection with that person. I just, that day was super, super busy and I was just copy pasting and it just happened. Sorry, Brian.
Brian, Tony.
Brian Anthony, whatever. No.
Oh, gosh. That is funny. Well, obviously he didn't hold it against you because he did invite you on the podcast, and you'll enjoy like doing a podcast with him whenever he's interviewed me. I've done 2 episodes of his podcast. We always have a good time. We have great conversation. He ends up editing a little bit the last podcast. I'm like, yeah, there are some certain things you need to just like, cut out of there. Cause that just can't go public. So he's really good about that. I'm like, especially in the few minutes there, I went on a tirade and I was swearing. You definitely want to cut that out of the podcast.
Beep, 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 beep.
And he did. So yeah. Anyway.
Yeah. I'm a huge fan. I watch him all the time. I see him on LinkedIn and on Instagram. He's a big Instagram influencer and I am such a true fan of his. So it's going to be fun. I'm really excited.
Yeah. He's one of the originals of podcasting. I mean, he's been doing it now for over 4 years. I think he might be even going into his 5th year, mm-hmm. potentially. So that's pretty impressive. He hit the milestone of over 100 episodes. Earlier this year. It'll take me a while to get there because I only do an episode like every 2 weeks. But if I just, keep scheduling with you and we record hours and hours at a time, I can hit the milestone like much, much quicker.
On our overnight linners? Absolutely.
our linners. definitely. We have one coming up soon. You know what we should do during our Linners is we should just set like the iPhone down on the table and like hit record that record like the whole 12 hours like we're together and then just take snippets of that and then throw them into a podcast format because that'd be pretty funny. See, then we would have the conversation with the little boy recorded and that would be very entertaining.
Yes, it just would.
Something like that. That was a super funny moment, and I will never forget the look on his face. Whenever he was like thoroughly confused at your response there. Oh my gosh. Okay. Well, is there anything else? I have many, many more questions I'd like to ask you, but we've been recording for 2 hours and 32 minutes.
Like, wow.
Yeah. So this is definitely, now what did I say? I was joking with you. We need to do at least 90. But we were joking about knowing us, we'll probably do like closer to 3.
Yeah.
So we're at 2 hours and 32 minutes.
You said 90. So, I thought, that's cute.
So this podcast is definitely going to be a 3-parter, like no doubt. Honestly, it's kind of interesting how this like played out because I was trying to find like a single topic maybe to have one episode about or a few topics to break up into a 2-part episode. And I think our whole discussion on salary and negotiating, that might be a standalone episode in and of itself. So those of you, if you're hearing me say this now, this is 3. So you already know what I did. The mystery is solved because this is the last part in the 3 series. So maybe you heard an episode just about the salary discussion. I'll have to see how I want to edit that and how I want to piece it together. So are there any, you know, final thoughts you want to share with the audience? You know, one question that I like to ask is, what's one question that you wish that I would have asked? Like something that you would have liked to talk about that I just didn't touch on.
Oh, gee whiz. Wow. I thought about this. I don't think I selected that question, but.
You didn't, but I told you. That's I told you.
You're going to keep me on my toes.
Nothing is off limits. Like I do So I'll just tell my audience, I do allow the speakers to review a lengthy list of questions. I ask them to pick their favorite questions, but I also tell them that I can ask them anything on that list. So nothing's off limits. So it's not scripted. I just give them some food for thought before the interview, because I know sometimes when people ask me questions, I'm like, can't think of anything at the moment. And then like 2 hours later, I'm like, oh my gosh, I just thought of the best answer, best example of that thing. So I try to avoid those moments and really, you know, focus on substance. Although we had a lot of fluff in this episode too, I think, getting off on tangents, but it's fun. It's fun fluff. And I learned about, you know, my love of the Golden Girls, for example, and how I think they all look ancient, but hey, I love the show. It's, you know, useful information like that, that I want to put out into the world. I'm just saying.
Well, and it also helps us out to figure out Christmas presents and birthday presents for you. Just saying.
Oh yeah. You know what? Oh my gosh. I just thought of an idea for a podcast episode or YouTube. I'm like averse to YouTube. I don't want to do it because of the video component. But I kick butt at Golden Girls trivia. Would say that I could beat anybody when it comes to Golden Girls trivia. So that is something that I should do like online. We should have a Golden Girls trivia competition. Like,
we
seriously.
We could do that. There's got to be something out there. I'm sure there is. It's such a huge following.
I have a Golden Girls trivia book that I ordered a while back. Okay. This is like several years ago. And it was like 200 and something questions like in this book. In various forms, you know, the questions were. And I think I went through the whole book in 20 minutes and only missed like 10 questions. Like, seriously.
Whoa, I'm so impressed. So,
I don't know if I should be proud or ashamed. I'm not sure.
Proud. Be proud. I should be proud. Ashamed of me that Betty I knew that White so well. Would be impressed. Betty, if you're listening,
We need to challenge Betty White to a Golden Girls trivia competition, and that would go viral. I need to put that out into the universe and see if I can make that happen. Betty's like 100. She was there for all of it. Let's see how Betty can stack up against Stacey. I'm just saying.
I see that.
Oh gosh. And then medical shows. Like you talked, so before we wrap up, because now we're into the more fun segment. I mentioned The Good Doctor and how Sean Murphy processes things. And then you brought up like House. Like I have to say, out of all the medical shows I've watched, like hands down, House is my absolute favorite of like all medical shows for 2 reasons. One, I love that medical mystery component, like going back to the like mystery diagnosis shows and things of that nature. But what I love about that show is that would never happen in real life. That man would have lost his license and been in jail, like episode like one, like seriously. Yep. Exactly. And that is what is so great about that show, is it was so not steeped in reality. A lot of medical knowledge packed into the show, but not even like remotely close, where the other shows try to mimic reality. And quite frankly, you know, I want to watch TV that has like that escapism component. Like, I don't understand why we want to watch something that like mimics like real life. Like, give me something that's completely out of the realm of possibility. And that was just completely out of the realm of possibility.
Now, there's a couple of times that I've watched shows that they have talked about real issues that we're going through. I saw on New Amsterdam a few months now, maybe it was last season, where the coder came walking up with one of the doctors and said, you know, I need a diagnosis for so-and-so. And they said, I don't know, she's crazy. And she said, no, there's no ICD-10 code for that. I need a better ICD-10 code than something more specified. And I thought, oh my gosh, I've said those words. and so I thought that was kind of funny, that when you hear something that that truly resonates, you know, a lot of the medical shows, we see things, but they're talking more on the clinical side and not on the management side. The Resident is another one that talks about some business of healthcare issues that we see. Mm-hmm. So I thought that was kind of neat to see that resonation there. But you're right, like sometimes you just need a good episode of Scrubs. And
it's just there. I mean, you take it at face value and it's not real, but it, you know, it's funny. It's like, you know, it's interesting to see now, like in episodes, medical episodes, they are picking up more on the business aspect of healthcare and incorporating that into an episode. And you just talked about an ICD-10 code, like being mentioned in an episode, and TV has like come like a long way. So here's something funny that I remember from years ago. So I hate to admit it, but I still watch Days of Our Lives. Like still, I've like watched Days of Our Lives like for years. That's what I do pretty much on my lunch break, like every day. That's like what I do. Like a typical weekday for Stacey, Monday through Friday is, you know, I work in the morning, do what I need to do, have a lunch break, watch Days of Our Lives. After that, I'm ready for my afternoon nap. And, then after that, you know, I may go back to work if I have other things to do. I might go do something else. I don't know, whatever. So anyway, you don't need to like know all that. Now people are saying, I hate you, Stacey. More people are saying that.
Get out there.
Where people are going to say, I hate you. I talk about making money golfing. I'm talking about napping Monday through Friday at 2 o'clock in the afternoon.
Those of you that are listening, I don't have that life. I just want to put it out there. While Stacey is enjoying golf and Days of Our Lives, I am a slave to my desk. The shackles are large.
Okay, but you have the control to change that, and you do not have to have. That's when I, you know, people do joke like, I hate you, and there's a little bit of jealousy people have towards that. But I'm like, it's available to everybody.
Yes,
it is.
It's like if you make life balance.
If you make up your mind that you want to do something, especially now technology, you can create your own side hustle. You can start with something on the side in addition to your full time gig and start making revenue online. Anybody can create an online business. You just can. It's affordable enough. It's doable. Medical coding, it's a great opportunity for people to get into, make extra money, you know, have a side hustle. Victoria a while back did a video about the six-figure, you know, medical coder. That was one of her popular YouTube videos. It is completely possible for medical coders to make $100,000 a year. Now, with that said, you may not make $100,000 a year from your full-time 40-hour-a-week job. You may need to do other things to bring you up to that $100,000, which eventually then you could leave your full-time job and you could be that six-figure coder independent of someone else and do it for yourself. I am a firm, firm believer in that, absolutely 100% for sure. So years ago, watching an episode of Days of Our Lives, there was one of the characters where she had accidentally hit her stepbrother with the car and killed him, okay? So she ended up being charged with him, you know, being killed in that accident where she hit him with the car. And then she ended up being sentenced to probation with community service. And so she was at the hospital and she was doing her volunteer work. And I don't know if it was a friend or a boyfriend or someone, I don't remember, because this isn't the part of the story that stands out. What I'm about to tell you is came and asked her to go somewhere or do something and wanted her to leave with them. And she said, okay, this convict who is doing community service said with a stack of charts on the counter, I can't leave. I have to code these charts. Seriously? Did she just say that? I'm like, what an insult to the profession. Clearly, they have no clue because they're portraying it as the ex-con who sends to community service can come in off the street and code medical records. So that really ticks me off the days of their lives. We can go ahead and wrap up this episode because I don't know about you, but I got to go to the bathroom and I'm hungry. and we're 3 minutes away from Days of Our Lives starting.
Okay.
No, it's all good. It's all good. I put it on DVR. I don't always watch it live. I don't sit down every day at one and watch it live. I will say that if anybody's curious.
Well, okay. I just sent my assistant out for lunch. So I'm agreeing with you. It's about that time. It's a bio break and lunchtime and.
Definitely. Okay. So before we wrap up, please tell us, where can my listeners find you online? How can they connect with you?
Well, they can connect with me either on my website. It's Sterling Global Solutions. And Sterling is spelled with an I, S-T-I-R-L-I-N-G, like the province in Scotland and the castle where Mary, Queen of Scots was born. Yes, there is some relation there, but it's way, right. So Sterling with an I. We are on LinkedIn. I am on LinkedIn, Facebook. My company has a Facebook page. We have an Instagram page. We have a YouTube channel, and that's where you can find a lot of my vodcasts or vlogs. I don't know. It's video. They're about 30 minutes long. We just chat about different coding things that are going on. I do a live coding with Christine Hall every other Thursday. We talk about different issues that are going on in the industry or new things that are coming up or old things that need to be talked about, whatever. So, and you can always reach out to my good friend, Stacy, and say, hey, how do I get in touch with Christine? And she'll forward it on to you.
So. Of course. So, okay. I have one last question for you. This is something that I've had a curiosity about that I've never asked you. So I'm going to ask you this question right now. In front of the whole entire world. So, your company is named Sterling Global Solutions. Why is it named Sterling Global Solutions when your name is not Sterling? Did you used to be a Sterling and that's why
I was? I was a Sterling. I was born a Sterling. And my family is from Uruguay, which is in South America.
So how are you born a Sterling? Because apparently I know your mom and your sisters. Uh-huh. And that last name isn't Sterling like either. No, so
my mother remarried. And he adopted my sisters by name only, right? And I was with my father. So it was kind of a split household. And so they are biologically Sterling, but they have another last name. And they're both married now. So they have another last name and they're both divorced. So I'm sure they'll have another last name. And you know how it is. But yeah, so because we're from South America and my family is in France and in Chile and in Sweden. And so I thought a nice way, when my father passed away in 2019, a nice way to honor my father was to use my maiden name and, you know, really say that this is global. And I'm not opposed to working. I've had students that were from India. We have a big coding presence in India, a big coding presence in Abu Dhabi, in different places of the world. Ireland has a huge, huge network of coders there. Shout out to my Irish friends there. And so I'm not limited to just being here. My passport is up to date. If you need me, call me. I'm ready to go. And that's where my company comes from, Sterling Global Solutions. And that's my story.
So mystery solved. That was just that burning question. So so it was interesting. Last time Christine and I hung out, we had established that I had already met her sisters, that we had gone to school together. I had already met her mother. Me and her mother used to go to the same church. It's like super funny that where there was these connections. And so I'm going to like leave you with this like cliffhanger. Okay. The next time I see you, I'm going to tell you about another mutual connection that I noticed when I went to your Facebook page. I was like, oh my gosh. I'm like, she knows this person. And the funny thing is, I've told you a story about this person one of the times that we were together. I didn't say the person's name in the story, but it's this person who apparently you're close friends with too. I've been able to glean from Facebook. So I'm saving that for when we see each other in person.
Oh, I'm Facebook stalking right now to see who it is. I'm so curious.
It's somebody who you're Facebook friends with. So I'm going to tell you, it was not a positive story.
I'll be honest. So I have a very eclectic bunch of friends, and so not all of them are going to give you a positive story. I'll be honest.
So no, it was funny. So I'm just like, oh well, I know who her sisters are and her mom. Blah, blah, blah. So let me just go look at Facebook and see if there's any other funny mutual connections, right? And then I'm like, oh really? Okay. Next time I see her, I'm going to have to tell her that story.
Yes.
Make the connection there. Connect the dots.
The so drama.
It's definitely a small word. So you're going to be in suspense until I see you on Saturday.
I will, because I just tried to look on Facebook and I couldn't see our mutual friends there. So
it's not a mutual friend. It's not a friend of mine.
Oh,
it's no friend of mine. Which one of your friends did me wrong?
Now I'm totally in suspense now.
Face. We're looking at each other on video recording this. And so I see the look on her face. She's like, oh my gosh. Like, she's intrigued by this. Yes.
Don't judge me. That's all I'm saying.
The minute I saw that, I thought about texting you. And then I'm like, no, I'm going to save that for a face to face. I'm not going to reveal this on text. Seriously.
How interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. So, So think on that over the next several days.
I will. Wow. The drama continues.
So, yeah. So it's a very small world, the medical profession. Is. Let's just say that. So let's wrap up on this positive note, this piece of advice. You should really be careful with how you deal with people. Now, this person, it's not a big deal. I mean, in the grand scheme of things, it's not a big thing. It's not a horrific thing. It isn't. It doesn't even bother me like anymore. It's just like ridiculous. So I'll put that out there. This person didn't do some major wrong to me. Just let the audience like know. I just found it interesting that I had told you a story that involved this person and they showed up on your Facebook page. It was more that like anything else. But the point is, it is a very small world. It is a very small community. You never know who knows who. So be very careful about what you say. Be very careful about, you know, burning bridges. Now, myself, I've told stories about me being mouthy and mouthing off to people and arguing with people. And you'll hear more of those stories. And I tell them for like entertainment value, like I kind of laugh at these stories. I don't necessarily recommend that you always behave in the manner that I have in the past. I think there's a better way to handle situations sometimes.
Well, HR is much more strict than they used to be in certain circumstances. I think now that the younger people have a lot more guidelines that they have to follow, behaviors they have to follow. So
there's definitely things that you could not get away with today. I mean, me, I would sometimes involve HR in my issues and I would go to the appropriate people, but I was pretty bold in what I would say. About, you know, certain situations, but no, that the work environment has changed a lot. I know how things were, say, back in the early 2000s, you know, I just recently posted on Facebook. There was something about like, you know, is there like a job or something you had where you missed the people you used to work with? And the one company that I worked at 20 years ago, I loved almost everyone that I worked with. And it was a lot of young people working at the company. And we had so much fun. And we have shared since we've left the company, you know, all these years later, we're all different places and some of us still keep in touch. Oh my gosh, the stuff that went on there would never, ever fly in this climate that we live in like now. Mm-hmm. Now, there were people who were okay with things that were going on. Everybody was participating in different things back then. There was nothing. I mean, I was the compliance officer, for goodness sakes, you know, back at that time. And I worked closely with HR. And I think back, I shake my head. I'm like, oh my goodness. I'm like, that just, it couldn't be. It just absolutely couldn't be.
Well, Stacey, that's the question you didn't ask me. If I had any interesting employee stories, that would have been a fun question to ask me.
Oh my gosh. Okay. Yeah. Okay. I think I need to like ask you that question. I know we said we were going to wrap up, but I want to ask you that question. If you have, now I could tell stories too, but I have to be careful about certain stories that I tell, but I don't necessarily want to put them out in public. But yeah, it was, again, it's a very different situation. And I could tell some just funny stories of things that like occurred from like early on in my career and some not so funny things. I just wish like, I was smart when I was younger because I could have like filed a lot of lawsuits and made a lot of money and then probably never had to work a day in my life. I definitely could have done that if we were working in the same environment that we are today. There are some people I could have taken down and they would have been paying out some serious money. That's all I'm going to say about that. That's one place in particular, and we'll leave it at that. So to please share your story and then we will wrap up after you share your story.
So throughout the years, I've had a lot of employees, not a lot of employees. I had some great employees, but I also had some that left me with some funny stories. I have one employee who I always like to provide lunch, not every day, but you know, at least once a week, I'm hosting a lunch for my staff.
That's nice.
It's a great way for us to get together, chat, catch up.
What day is that? I'll come over.
Right? I hear you. Well, isn't that Friday for us usually? Anyway.
Saturday, yeah.
I ordered a pizza and a couple of pizzas and things. And I asked the employees, I said, you know, does anybody want anything? A salad or knots or whatever? And this one young lady, just as straight-faced as she could, she goes, yeah, I'll have a beer with mine. I was like, if you saw my face right now, I'm making one of those, oh my gosh, faces. And I said, no, you're on the clock. We don't consume alcohol. It's part of the, you know, if you look at the employee manual, she goes, oh, well, I always have beer with my pizza. So that was a funny one. I had another staff member that had only worked for me for a few weeks. And we were having a conversation and she said something that was just absolutely ridiculous. And I have a tendency to really show emotion on my face a lot. And she stops in the middle of the, and she stands up and looks at me and she goes, did you just roll your eyes at me? Nobody rolls their lady, I'm your boss. I didn't, oh, wow. Not like I said anything to you to offend you, but you're really off the mark here. And I said, I probably did roll my eyes, you know, only because of the answer that you gave. And she was mortified, left, slammed the door, peeled out of the parking lot. And I was like, okay, so that just happened. Yeah. So I've had lots of little stories like that. Again, I've had some amazing people work for me that I can't even say, but there have been those few that have come in and just really surprised me.
Yeah, that's, I work mostly independently now. I don't take on really large projects that require a lot of people. Just because managing people and it's just not worth it. It's a stress that I don't want. And eye rolling can definitely get you in trouble. I think I told you one of my eye rolling stories that I would not repeat on the podcast. but I'm pretty sure I told you my one eye rolling story.
Yeah.
And so on the eye rolling, it was kind of funny. So, and then we will wrap up. I'm like the preacher at church. And in closing. Like with this, that's the thing. It's like, I start thinking about other things and it makes me think of funny little things there. Exactly. Shoot. See, now I lost my thought. What were we talking about?
Employees that have worked for us and funny things. Eye rolling. We were on eye rolling.
That was it. Okay. I'm like, I have nothing to do with the employees. Okay. So we talked about things with COVID and how things changed. So beginning of COVID, everything went virtual. And so now all of a sudden everybody's like on like Zoom and we're all like videoing with people. And this is something that I wasn't accustomed to. Now there are some Zoom meetings that I just would not turn on the camera. Well, some meetings you were forced to turn on the camera. You had to be on the camera. It's not optional. They need to see you. What I found, what that taught me in that Zoom world, I didn't realize how much I rolled my freaking eyes during meetings. Because now I'm on video and somebody would say something and instinctively that eye roll would start to kick in. And then I honestly felt like it was painful to like hold it back because I couldn't let it go because I'm on video. And I had to adjust to that because I could feel myself getting ready to do it. And I would physically have to stop myself from rolling my eyes on Zoom. So I think that has helped me break that habit. Since we have to be on camera so many times. And I didn't realize how many times I did that in meetings when people were talking. I was aware of the fact that I would literally sometimes beat my head on the desk, like put it down and bang it a few times. Like that I would do in certain meetings. Like, oh my gosh, are you serious? The eye rolling thing had escaped me. I didn't realize that. I mean, obviously the head banging, you're not going to do that on video. but the eye rolling, you don't even think about doing it because it just happens like automatically. It's like a reflex reaction. And so
I'm
I had
really
to
break bad at it.
Of the eye rolling. So I apologize to anybody out there that has ever had a meeting with me. Now you're picturing me rolling my eyes like at you. You don't know that. Maybe you weren't the person getting the eye roll. I didn't do it to everybody, just saying. So, so you'll be left to guess whether I rolled my eyes at you or not. That'll be the great mystery that I will never reveal. Never, ever, ever.
But you now you know that if you come up to Stacy and say, hey, you rolled your eyes at me one time, she won't deny it.
People won't know. They won't know. They don't know. If I did it in person, which I've done it in person again, but yeah, the Zoom cured me of that absolutely 100%. So,
all righty. Thank you so much, Stacy. I had so much fun. I do care what you say. I love your podcasts. Thanks for having me today.
I love how you tied that back into the name because I wonder, does anybody really care what I have to say? So we'll see. More people are starting to care what I have to say, but after this episode, could be crash and burn. Maybe they won't care anymore.
I don't see that.
We'll see how it goes. But I want to thank you so much for being a guest on this episode. Most appreciated. I didn't intend to take 3 hours of your time. We joked about it, but I didn't intend to do it.
You didn't take anything that I wasn't volunteering.
Well, that is so sweet of you. And I look forward to our next dinner when we get together. And I'm sure in the future, I'll bring you back for another episode at some point next year. I'm still trying to figure out where I want to go, you know, with the podcast and how I want to format it and develop it. Thank you, Christine, so much for joining me today for Who Cares What Stacy Says. And I look forward to speaking with you again in the future.
Thank you so much, Stacy. It's been my ultimate pleasure.
That brings us to the end of part 3 of my interview with Christine Hall. I hope you had as much fun listening to our episodes as we had recording them. I have no doubt I will invite Christine back for future episodes. As always, I want to say thank you to my loyal listeners for tuning in. If you are listening on Apple Podcasts, please, please be sure to take a moment to give the podcast a 5-star rating. If you have feedback you'd like to share on an episode or a topic suggestion, please send an email to podcast@radrx.com. That's podcast@radrx.com. And I would still love to start an Ask Stacy segment, so please submit any questions you would like to have me answer in a future episode to email to askstacy@radrx.com. That's Stacy spelled STACIE @radrx.com. Thanks again for tuning in and have an amazing week.
Thank you for listening to Who Cares What Stacy Says. You can connect with Stacy on social media. You can find her business page for RadRx on Facebook, and you can connect with her personally on LinkedIn. Don't forget to check out the online training courses offered by RadRx, Cracking the IR Code, Mastering Interventional Radiology and Cardiology Online Training, or Cracking the Diagnostic Radiology Code Online Training. Thanks again for tuning in to Who Cares What Stacy Says, a podcast providing insights and advice on how to take your medical coding career to the next level.